You're listening to SBS News.
Dan Tehan, thanks very much for joining SBS World News.
Pleasure to be with you, Anna.
So you're travelling the world, having meetings with people involved in all types of trade negotiations, but in particular, the trade ministers meeting related to the G20. What did you have to tell them about the fact that our Prime Minister might not show up?
So what I've been engaged in is making sure that we are pursuing our trade interests to the best of our ability. And I must say the reception that I've had here in Europe and at the G20 meeting has been one where they appreciate the role that Australia plays, both in the World Trade Organization and bilaterally. They're very keen to engage with us, and that's been the absolute focus of the meetings that I've been having.
But on that question of why our Prime Minister isn't attending the G20 leaders meeting, where he would have had the chance to potentially have sideline discussions with the French President Emmanuel Macron and the Chinese President Xi Jinping, what are you telling other colleagues and people that you're meeting in other countries about why Scott Morrison won't be there?
Well, one of the things that is very well understood from all countries who are attending the G20 is that we're obviously still in the middle of a pandemic, and governments have to deal with the pandemic. And obviously in Australia, we're at a very interesting position or a position which is absolutely vital to how we come out of the pandemic, because we're getting our vaccination rates up nearly to the highest amongst the world. But obviously there's states and territories where there is no virus. So this transition from where we're at the moment to living with the virus is an absolutely crucial one. And everyone understands that the focus of leaders of governments has to be first on dealing with the pandemic.
And I probably overreached a little bit in my question because Scott Morrison hasn't made a final decision on that front. But are you expecting that there really is any chance that, given Australia is opening up at that point in time, that he would make another international trip and go through another period of quarantine?
Well, ultimately, you know, the Prime Minister will weigh up all these considerations, but rightly, his primary focus has to be on what's occurring in Australia. So he'll weigh that up with also the other considerations about pursuing the national interest. And I'm sure ultimately we'll make the right call, which is in the interests of the Australian people.
The last time we heard a detailed broadcast interview from you, you were in France. At that point in time, you'd had some knockbacks from members of the French government and people within industry in France. Did you have a chance for any diplomatic or political discussions directly with the French while you were in Paris?
Oh, look, I met with four major companies while I was in France. I met with the French tourism industry, and I met with seven European trade ministers while I was in France. So I got to have some very detailed conversations about what we can do to improve trade between Australia and the EU, and in particular to point out the interest that there is in the Australia EU free trade agreement from a European Union point of view. Obviously gives them that foothold in the Indo-Pacific, and from our point of view, you know, the importance of us being able to formalise in greater detail our economic and trading relationship through an FTA with our second largest trading partner.
Do you see the impasse with the French and the problems that have come from the AUKUS deal as needing to be repaired in order for any EU trade deal to be struck?
Well, France is obviously a key member of the European Union, and we want to be able to sit down and discuss with France the AUKUS partnership and be able to make sure that they understand that the decision we ultimately took was in our national interest. So that open invitation remains. Obviously, we've seen a positive move in terms of relationship with the French ambassador returning to Australia. And so our hope is that over time we'll be able to sit down and have those conversations. And they will be important given France's role in the EU. But I must say, from all the other meetings I've had, including with the Italian trade minister last night, there is very positive very positive sentiment towards the Australia-EU FTA and a real understanding that it's both in the European Union's favour and in our favour if we can achieve something.
What do you think the French government actually wants here? Do they want your government to make a public apology, for example? What is it going to take to get that relationship back on course and then get you into a realistic time frame for having this EU trade deal struck?
Well, ultimately, I think the most important thing is that we can sit down and talk and work through these issues. And that's why there's that open invitation for us to do that, because we want to be able to explain why we ultimately made a decision that was in our national interest, and also to once again express that we understand France's disappointment with the decision which was made with regards to French submarines. And the best way we can do that is by sitting down and talking.
Do you think they want a public apology though? And would you be prepared and your government be prepared to make a comment like that? Is that what the French are looking for here?
Look, what we want is to be able to sit down and talk and work through these issues and to understand the French disappointment as much as being able to explain from our point of view why we took a decision which was in our national interests. And the sense that I get is that that's the best way that we'll be able to explain the current circumstances and why we took the decision that we did. It's through that two-way dialogue, and then we can understand why the French want us to obviously be able to deal with these circumstances in a way which, you know, recognises their disappointment, but also in a way that we can understand why we took this decision, one which was very much in our national interest.
While you're away, the discussions over climate policy and the negotiations between the Liberal and National parties continue on. How crucial is it that you are able to strike a deal with your national junior partner colleagues and that something substantial is on the table for Glasgow to your broader relationships with the countries that you want to increase trade ties with?
Look, I think there's a recognition from all countries that that we have to deal with climate change, but we've also got to deal with it dependent on your own circumstances. But, you know, Australia is recognised for making a meaningful contribution to the debate. One of the things that I was able to raise at the Paris OECD meeting, for instance, was that when it comes to agriculture and land use, it accounts for 25% of emissions, yet nothing is being done really to focus in on this area, especially the role that agricultural subsidies are playing when it comes to emissions. And if we are to address seriously climate change, we have to address agricultural subsidies. They will grow to $1.8 trillion by 2030, and that's on a per annum basis. And I was able to raise this with Ambassador Kerry. He said he understood that we have to leave no stone unturned and he would look into this issue. So Australia's role in this debate is seen as meaningful, one of substance, and one where we continue to play a very positive role.
So in terms of the next steps then, is there any chance, do you think, that you'll get a fair hearing and be treated seriously if your government doesn't take a more substantial emissions policy to Glasgow?
Well, I think there is an understanding that we are taking a substantial position to Glasgow. I mean, we've met our Kyoto targets. We're going to meet and beat our Paris targets. For instance, today I'll be meeting with the Singaporean Trade Minister, where we will be finalising our negotiations on a green economy agreement, which will be a world-leading agreement when it comes to emissions reduction and sustainability. And we're putting this agreement together so in the hope that other countries will be able to join this down the track. So there is very much a strong sense that Australia is a serious contributor to the debate. What we're doing with our clean energy technology partnerships is seen as real. So, you know, the overwhelming sense that I've had here is that Australia is seen as a partner that contributes and always contributes. And that will continue to be the case as we work through our final position in the lead up to Glasgow.
Does your job get a little bit harder in making that argument when you have your resources minister throw up the idea of a $250 billion loan scheme that the government would underwrite for the coal industry, for example?
Well, one of the things that all governments do is ultimately it's the final positions that governments have are the ones that you obviously discuss and have the dialogue on it. Everyone understands that there's always internal debate. People will put points of view, but ultimately it's what your government's track record is. And ours is a very good one. And then also what the policies and the approach that you'll take to COP26. And obviously we're finalising those at the moment. And that's what the governments that I've met with, the ministers that I've met with, want to discuss. And as I've said, it's one where they look at the substance of what we're able to deliver and see us as a meaningful partner in how the globe is dealing with climate change.
Can I just take you to a couple of questions on your travels and the different countries you've been to? What do you want to achieve at this point through your discussions with India? And is the most important and crucial part of getting that trading relationship on track international students and large numbers of them being able to come to Australia as soon as possible?
Well, when I was in India, there was the very welcome news through the announcement by the PM that our international border will reopen in November. That was very well received, and we had discussions as to how then international students and especially Indian students would be able to return to Australia, and that's something that the Indian government is and the Indian people are looking to and looking for. But we also had very meaningful discussions around our bilateral economic relationship, and we've been able to progress discussions with regards to Australia-India Free Trade Agreement, and we're seeking to make meaningful progress on that by Christmas. So it was welcome news on the international border, and also welcome news that we will be able to progress our free trade agreement with India between now and Christmas.
Okay, and a final question to you, Minister. I know you do have to go and we really appreciate your time. Could you just update me as to your position on the COVID vaccine intellectual property discussion? I understand there's another World Trade Organization meeting in the next couple of days. How forward-leaning will Australia be in pushing for change there?
Oh, look, we want to see this issue resolved. It's an absolute key issue for one of the major outcomes we're trying to get at the ministerial meeting of the WTO at the end of November, beginning of December. It's called the Trade and Health Initiative. We have to be able to unlock the discussions around the IP waiver when it comes to vaccines, and we are fully engaged on this and want to see it resolved. I'll be meeting with both Indians, South Africans and the European Unions in the next 24 hours to see whether we can find a way forward on this. I'm confident that we can if everyone's willing to basically give a little bit, because the importance of it is so great in making sure that not only can we get the vaccine productions to the levels that we need to, and they will hit 24 billion by the end of next year, but also that we can get the distribution right to make sure that the vaccines are distributed also globally. That's how we're going to beat this pandemic.
And we thank you so much for your time, and thanks for joining SBS World News.
Pleasure, Anna.
Enjoy the rest of your trip, and we really appreciate it.
Thanks. We'll see you when we get back on Sunday.